Once upon a time, there was an empire that seemed to be on the verge of collapse. Sports, always popular entertainment with the people of this empire, had become intertwined with politics. Protests were held at sports stadiums. Political leaders responded to these protests. I am, of course, talking about the Eastern Roman Empire during the 6th century. Here's only a game's Martin Kessler.
The first thing you need to know about the Emperor Justinian is that his motto was essentially, make the Roman Empire great again. Justinian came to power in 527 AD, about 50 years after the fall of the Western Roman Empire. Justinian ruled the Eastern Roman, also known as the Byzantine Empire, out of Constantinople.
He felt, I think, fairly strongly that the Roman Empire had taken a huge hit before his reign.
That's historian Mike Dash.
And that it was his duty, really, as emperor, to try and reconquer as much of that as possible.
The second thing you need to know about Justinian is that he married a prostitute, and not just any prostitute. She was
the most scandalous woman of the age.
Her name was Theodora, and she was the daughter of a bear keeper. As was likely the fate of many bear keepers, Theodora's father died unexpectedly. A lot of what we know about Theodora comes from a contemporary historian named Procopius. Theodora grew up to become an actress, which Procopius explains had a very different meaning back then.
She became a courtesan, and such as the ancient Greeks used to call a common one at that, for she was not a flute or harp player, nor was she even trained to dance, but only gave her youth to anyone she met in utter abandonment. There was no shame in the girl, and no one ever saw her dismayed.
That's actor Eric Chung reading the words of Procopius. It's believed that Justinian attended one of Theodora's performances and was absolutely smitten, which explains how a bear keeper's daughter turned courtesan ended up as empress. Theodora may not have been the obvious pick for the job, but she was smart, and she understood the citizens of Constantinople. Qualities that would one day play a critical role in preserving Justinian's reign. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Back to sports. The imperial pastime was chariot racing.
They were massively popular events. I mean, they were the NFL and the MLB rolled into one in terms of sporting entertainment.
During the days of the Roman Empire, leaders tried to win favor by putting on elaborate games. Gladiatorial combat had mostly died out by the 6th century, but most cities across the empire had their very own chariot racing stadiums. The biggest of all was right in Constantinople. It was called the Hippodrome. It was about four times the size of a football field and shaped like a massive horseshoe. It held around 100,000 people. A secret passageway connected the imperial palace directly to the imperial box where the emperor would watch the chariot races from his throne. Imagine the Queen of England having her own tunnel directly into Wembley Stadium. Down below, up to 12 charioteers, each pulled by four horses, raced around a track just 150 feet wide. Deaths were common. It didn't help that spectators sometimes tossed nail-studded tablets onto the track. They also wagered large sums of money on the races. At the time, there were two rival chariot racing teams, the Blues and the Greens. Both had big followings in Constantinople, and this is where sports and politics really become intertwined.
There is one group of historians who essentially say that the Blues and the Greens were effectively almost prototype political parties. The Blues were the sort of party of the authorities. The emperor himself, Justinian, was a well-known partisan of the Blues, and the Greens were the party of the plebs, the people.
As I said earlier, Justinian was focused on taking back the Roman Empire's lost territory. But war costs a lot of money. So Justinian raised taxes, even on wealthy people. And wealthy people do not like being taxed. So the citizens of Constantinople grew frustrated. Here's the ancient historian Procopius again.
Not all the Blues were willing to follow his leadership, but there were plenty who were eager for civil war.
Civil war may not have begun at the chariot races, but fights regularly broke out in the stands. And that brings us to the year 532.
It's really a powder keg. And what happened in 532 was that there was a fight in the Hippodrome between the partisans of the Blues and the Greens. The local police force, which essentially is the Imperial Guard, waded in to separate the two sides. And there was a trial and seven men were sentenced to be hanged.
The hanging was scheduled for a few days later on the banks of the Bosphorus. The first five men were successfully executed.
And then the gallows collapsed as the last pair were being hanged.
We're not really sure why the gallows suddenly collapsed, but
the crowd took this as a sign that they weren't meant to die, and they waded in and rescued the two guys, one of whom was a green and one of whom was a blue, and they hustled them off to sanctuary in a nearby church. So you have a situation where, for once, the blues and the greens, in a sense, are united against the government, and that's really where it all starts going sort of horribly wrong.
Yes, even more horribly wrong, because at the next chariot race, the partisans of the blues and greens return to the hippodrome, and
rather than fighting each other, they suddenly start showing rather disconcerting signs of being on the same side. And the words that they're screaming are ones that you very often hear in chariot races at this time. I mean, they're just shouting out, Nika, Nika, which is Greek for win, win. Normally, you would use that to encourage your charioteer to win the race, but it becomes rather obvious that what they're really talking about is the victory of the greens and the blues over the emperor. So what happened was that the order went out, you know, shut the races down now. We've got to regain control of the situation. And when the hippodrome was shut down, the crowd streamed out into the streets of Constantinople. And rather than dispersing, they began simply to burn the city down.
According to Procopius,
fire was applied to the city as if it had fallen under the hand of an enemy.
While the city burned, Justinian holed up in the imperial palace. A day passed and the rioting didn't stop. Then another day passed. Still no sign of stopping. The rioters returned to the hippodrome and made it a sort of headquarters. This must have made the emperor nervous. Remember, the hippodrome is directly connected to the imperial palace. To try and appease the mob, Justinian dismissed his hated tax collector. That didn't work. The rioters continued to burn the city. Justinian grew more and more anxious. On the fifth day of the riots, the Blues and Greens appointed a new rival emperor, who is seated on the throne inside the hippodrome. Justinian considered fleeing.
Well, this is where Theodora really sort of proves her mettle. I mean, yeah, she said to her husband,
if you, my lord, wish to save your skin, you will have no difficulty in doing so.
This is Erica Lance reading the part of Theodora.
We are rich, there is the sea, there too are our ships. But consider first whether, when you reach safety, you will regret that you did not choose death in preference. As for me, I stand by the ancient saying, the purple is the noblest winding sheet.
In other words, you should die rather than give up the power of being emperor. And she shamed Justinian into staying and fighting.
Justinian gathered two of his generals. He told them to plan a counterstrike. According to one apocryphal account, one general appeased the blues by bribing them with gold coins and reminding them that Justinian supported their side. But historian Mike Dash says the truth is likely far more brutal. One general led his troops through the hippodrome's main entrance. The other used the imperial guard to barricade all the other exits, trapping the lesser armed and disorganized rioters inside.
You know, numbers tend to get exaggerated, but you know, we are told that 30,000 people were killed inside the stadium in less than a day.
The newly appointed rival emperor was executed, and his body was tossed in the sea. As Procopius puts it,
this was the end of the insurrection in Byzantium.
Justinian's power was once again secure. As an extra screw you to the people of Constantinople, he even reappointed that dreaded tax collector. Justinian ruled for another 3 decades until his death in 565. And Justinian and Theodora left the empire in a powerful position.
It lasts for another 900 years after his death. At no point in that time does it have the borders as wide as the ones that Justinian set for it.
But chariot racing would not recover from what would become known as the Nika riots.
Because what we've seen is what can go horribly wrong when the people get too excited by these games. So what happens, in fact, is that people start putting their passion not into chariot racing, but into theological debate. And people start forming new factions rather than, you know, over blues and greens in the hippodrome, over different interpretations of verses in the Bible.
Ah, but that's a story for another day and another show.
That's Only a Game's Martin Kessler. To read more about the Nika riots, check out Mike Dash's article for Smithsonian Magazine titled Blue vs. Green, Rocking the Byzantine Empire. You can find a link at onlyagame.org.